everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode number 44. I am Michael Citro from themainland.com, the SB Nation blog covering Orlando City SC. And joining me is Andrew Harrison tonight. It's just me and you. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I've had a few weeks off. I'm fully rested and I'm ready to go.
Oh, man. Our writers are being lame tonight. They have things like school and work and... you know, they don't have time to just sit and talk about soccer. So, I mean,
they're lame.
That's unacceptable in my eyes. At least, you know, we're doing something important with our lives and they are not. So, you know, when we last spoke, we were getting ready to go into the weekend and play the Portland Timbers, the defending MLS Cup champions. And I think we all... you know, had a lot of thoughts about that game, and some were even very optimistic thoughts, but I don't think anybody came close to what happened on the pitch on Sunday evening. A 4-1 victory. It was just moments away from a 4-0 victory, and certainly when Kyle Larin went down early in that game, you didn't expect that kind of scoring outburst from Orlando City, but Kaká coming back seemed to lift the entire club, and everybody seemed to rise to the occasion playing against the champions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like you say, nobody expected it to go that well, but I think for the first time in a really long time, or maybe I'm going to say even ever, we actually saw Kaká as a talisman. You know, he was that one player that, even though heads could have gone down, his very presence and his movement and his participation in the game just elevated everybody else up to make up for that difference. And I think that's what we really wanted to see from him from the very start. And it was really nice to be able to see him do that. And it was just a great performance all around when you really look at it. I really don't want to put anybody down, even though we conceded that last-minute goal. Just Higuita and Seren were great. They played their part, but they stayed quiet. And, I mean, no yellow cards in that situation. Mm-hmm. They were all over the pitch. Shea had some great balls. I did think he had some weaknesses. The one player I guess I would probably be negative about was Rafael Ramos, just because you didn't really see him throughout the game. But he did his job that he had to do when he was there. It was just an interesting, such well-rounded performance that I don't think we'd ever really seen from this club since the LA Galaxy came to town last season.
Yeah, it was a fairly quiet night for Asprilla and Nagby. And so I think that if you count that, you have to say that the fullbacks played well when you consider how quiet those two were. You know, you didn't hear Chara's name a whole lot. Adi was the guy up top, and he didn't do a whole lot. I thought that Seb Hines did a very, very good job marking him and Tommy Redding before he went out with his injury. And the one danger man that I thought, you know, was really clicking for Portland was Diego Valeri. Joe Bendick, he forced a very nice save out of Joe Bendick on one occasion, and he led them in shots and chances created. So I thought Valeri was good. He didn't play against us last year, and he was. If I were a Portland fan, I would probably point to him and say he's the only one that had a good game. Mm-hmm. It really, from early on, Orlando City jumped on him with the set piece, first set piece goal of the year. Kaká from pretty close to 40 yards out with a, you know, just a nothing play that you wouldn't expect a whole lot of danger from, but Seb Hines made a nice play to keep the defender on the on his left side so he could get to the ball, and then he flicked it home just like you're supposed to, and really nice set piece goal, and then you know we had the great 1-2 with Kaká and Shea getting his first goal as an Orlando City player, first goal since 2012 at the club level. And
which is incredible when you think about his name and his synonymousness, you know, with being a great player for the U.S. team.
It really is. And you know, it was good to see him get off the schneid. And in fact, you know, the fact that he's playing left back, you would think, you know, he'll have even fewer chances than when he was a winger. But, you know, he really did play well down that left side. And he was not at all shy about getting forward. He had plenty of pace to get back and defend. And he did a pretty good job of that. And, you know, he had a couple of missteps in the game. He had the handball that led to the penalty, although clearly unintentional. He was just a quick deflection off Adrian Winter, and you know, maybe a little bit harsh considering the fact that he was so close to Winter and the ball came down. But you know, the fact is Bendick stopped the penalty, which you know, another huge play in that game because it could have made it 2-1 right there.
Well, that's also calmer as well. You know, that's what you love to see is when those ones that get answered, you know, you don't think they should have been given and then they get saved. You're like, that was calmer. That was the universe.
Yeah,
saying something.
Everything. They call it ball don't lie. That's what the kids are saying. Ball don't
ball
lie.
Ball don't lie. Okay, I'm gonna have to remember that. I feel so old.
Ball
now.
Don't lie. Yeah. So, and then you know, Kaká gets one of his own. You know, a nice goal for him on a tremendous play. Molino takes it down the right side and slides it in for Winter. Winter does a great job of walling off Nat Borchers, a really good defender, and ball kicks back to Kaká for the goal. I thought Winter got a touch on it, and I was calling that an assist for Winter, but he didn't get an assist officially. Perhaps Borcher got a toe to it. I can't really tell. I've watched the dang thing about 10, 15 times. I can't tell whose toe knocked the ball backward, but you know, from the video that's online. But you know, the important thing is that the captain found the back of the net, and then later on, maybe the best play that Kaká made all night. Molino gets pulled down in the box and Kaká hands him the ball for him to get his first MLS goal. Very unselfish, wanted to get his teammate going, and you know, just an incredible class move by Kaká.
It's a class move, and it shows you why he's the captain of this team. You know, he doesn't need the goals. He doesn't need that confidence boost, but he has been talking about Molino since he got to this club. And I think by giving him the ball and giving him that responsibility shows you what Molino means to him, to a former World Player of the Year, and the talent that he believes that he has. In even those every goal counts. You know, people will be like, well, it's a penalty. You know, let's see him score from open play. That'll really be it. But every goal counts. And I think that really hit. That was also the catalyst for this team to move forward on so many levels.
Yeah, and to put it into terms of another sport, it's you know, it's like when you can't hit your shot in basketball, so you try to get to the line. You try to, you know, take the ball inside and get fouled and get to the free throw line. It's you're still scoring points, but it's, you know, it's not the way that people envision you doing it. But you know, they all count the same. So
they all go on your stat sheet.
That's right. So it was good to see him get on. I was scared to death he was going to miss the penalty, and then go even into a deeper funk, but
there is always that risk.
Yeah, there is. It was a risky move, but he was in front of the supporter section, and you know, they carried on. I thought the crowd was great. We had 31,000 at the Citrus Bowl on a late Sunday night. It was a, you know, it's a work night, a school night, and yet a very, very nice crowd against a team that, yeah, they're MLS Cup champs, but they're not like you know, they're not like the big names like the Galaxy and the Sounders and that kind of thing. So, you know, they have some good players. I'm certainly not saying they don't, but I think the household names, you know, like the Robbie Keens and the Clint Dempseys and guys like that, you know, they've got some good players in Portland, some really underrated players too. But, you know, for this being a team we're only going to see once all year and you know, just not being the huge name club, because you know, the Portland market is not what the LA market is and that kind of thing. But I thought the crowd did a great job. They showed up in numbers. They were loud and they were electric all night. And you know, I don't know if that came through, you know, on television. I know that you and your wife ended up watching from home because you just moved. But you know, certainly at the Citrus Bowl, it seemed to be one of the more lively night crowds.
It was a great crowd. I mean, you got to think, 8 o'clock on a Sunday, games on TV, so it's even delayed from kickoff. The crowd just brought it, and I love that enthusiasm can come through in those situations. You know, we talk about weekdays, and Friday, Saturday nights are the big nights to get crowds, but we can still do that on a Sunday. That's really important to this club. I think it shows you how important this club is to the city. And we had a 12th man situation. You know, it never really needed that 12th man, but I think that was why we pushed on. We were trying to keep that clean sheet. And Portland just looked out of it. They may not be that big name club, but they do have some very talented individuals that they have found on the market that people weren't really looking at. and they've managed to bring it in, create a great team, and Caleb Porter has such a great winning record that it's hard to say anything negative against them, but they just looked, they looked deflated. Maybe it's a long West Coast travel, but we all have to do it, and it always happens to everybody. They just happened to be on the wrong end of it from us on Sunday night, but it was great, great, great win, and it did come through on TV without a doubt.
Yeah, it was a, it was, you know, the trip was reversed last year, and Orlando City went to Portland and got a 2-0 win. So, you know, you can't point to the travel. You have to look to a lot of things. I know that some of their fans, I was reading their site, and you know, some of their fans were talking about the turf and the referee not sending off Breck Shea. We'll get to that more in a minute. But you know, the bottom line is, it looked like Orlando City overwhelmed them in the midfield, didn't give them any room out wide to use any pace or get any, you know, dangerous crosses in. And Adi was always very carefully watched by the two center backs. I thought that Orlando City had a very good game plan. The possession was just about dead even in the first half. And in the second half, after Orlando City had gone up a couple goals, they started to cede more and more of the possession to Portland and just be content to defend and take their chances when they could. But, you know, and obviously as Kaká tired, because he hadn't played 90 minutes in, I don't know, he's played it in 2016. I don't know if he played 90 minutes, but he played 80. And you could tell he was pretty gassed, because he was, when the ball was in the defensive third, he just stood in the center circle and did not move.
Yeah.
So it was like, I'm sure on TV you couldn't even see him in frame.
No, there was times where, you know, he just wasn't even there. And you were like, is he even still on the field? Like, is he, you know, has he stopped to take a break? Is he having some water? You know, like, he just wasn't even there. But I think the players, he didn't need to be that player. He didn't need to be in every position, because the rest of the team had it. And I think that was also an important growth, because I remember writing at the start of early last season, Kaká was trying to do everybody's job. And that was really taking away from who he was. This time he said, you know what? I've got to do this. This is my role. This is my position. Everybody else is going to run around me and give me those opportunities to make the pass or get in some free space and take those shots. And that was the key to that game. All of a sudden, he didn't have to worry. Yes, we basically played Portland's game. We overwhelmed the team in the midfield. We allowed our playmaker in Kaká, just like Valeri, to have those shots, have the dead ball opportunities. And we just came out on top by a very, very big margin that nobody expected.
Yeah, it was an impressive performance all around. We, talking in the press box, Gavin and I were discussing, as we went along, man of the match is this guy. And it was until Kaká scored the goal, and he had two assists, but until he got the goal, Seb Hines was still our man of the match. He was just having that good of a match.
Yeah.
Not only did he score the goal, but he was making important interceptions and blocks in the area and you know, handling Adi and just doing a great job. I mean, it was easily his best game of the year. And we were going to reward him for that. And then Kaká got the extra goal. He's got the goal. It's like, well, now he's got a goal and two assists. Well, now he's got a goal and two assists and gave Molino a goal. So, you know, it became kind of a no-brainer. So it's a perfect segue into, I don't think you're probably going to argue with me, my man of the match was certainly Ricky.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. But I will say that I was with you on the Seb Hines situation. I remember turning to Lindsay and saying, you know, Seb's really kept Adi quiet. Like, you wouldn't know that they have a DP striker playing up front who is really dangerous. You just didn't have that. And also, I kind of wanted to give it to Hines a little bit. I'm not going to argue with your Ricky selection, but, you know, Hines lost his partner in Reading at halftime. And yeah, we still didn't really look fragile, even when we started giving them more of the ball. And I think you really have to give credit to a defense that looked shaky at times with that partnership. Yes, we conceded, but we didn't look completely shaky like we had previously. So I'm going to go with Ricky, but an honorable mention to Seb Hines.
Yeah, and another honorable mention to Chris Nogueta. I think he had another stellar game, breaking a play, really doing a great job, as he normally does. It was, you know, just another tour de force for the young Colombian. And he's a guy who, right now, according to WhoScored.com, is leading the entire league in tackles per game. He's at 7.3 tackles per game. He's a full tackle per game higher than second place. So he's having a really outstanding year, and if he keeps this up, he had a bad first game, but the last two games have been outstanding. If he can continue to play like that, he's going to get sold sooner rather than later to a European club, because he's just playing that well right now.
Well, and you also have to remember, he's making almost a tackle more per game in a team that plays two defensive midfielders and two solid solid defending center backs. That's mm-hmm. pretty incredible. He's not even letting the guys get to the center backs.
Carrasco
came on and played kind of that extra third DM, and he was still making those kind of tackles. And I actually think that was why he potentially didn't get booked that game, was he didn't have to make that last-ditch tackle that usually mm-hmm. ends up sacrificing himself for, because he always had another two people right behind him. So that's interesting. I wouldn't want to see us play three defensive midfielders all the time, because I want to see us go forward at some point. But it did change his game, and it even maybe's elevated it that little bit more.
Yeah, in fact, he started the play that ended in Kaká's goal with a nice diagonal ball for Molino. So even on the offensive end, he did his part. Yeah. So, just a great night for everybody. The only thing that wasn't great was the injuries. Of course, Kyle Larin, we mentioned, he tweaked a hamstring. He came out. He went back on briefly, but then they brought Carrasco in, took Larin off, and moved Kaká up to a false nine, as Adrian Heath explained after the match. You had your attacking midfielder, your maestro, who was, in all intents and purposes, playing striker, but still, dropping deep and getting the ball and getting other people involved in the play as well. So, great job by him. An interesting move by the coach to not just go with the next striker down the bench, but it all worked out very well. And I wouldn't be surprised if Laren's not making the trip to see Kaká in that false nine start the game against the Union on Friday night. The other injury, of course, Tommy Redding has been playing very, very well, especially for a 19-year-old in that center back pairing with Seb Hines. He clashed heads in the first half, came out at halftime, wasn't feeling well. You don't mess around with head injuries. He's out and probably with the concussion protocol, doubtful for Friday night, might not make the trip as well. So, Mateos was not on the bench. It's our understanding that he's fit enough to be in the 18, but maybe they're giving him hamstring a little bit extra time to heal. He wasn't in the 18. Aurelien Collin came on, got his first action of the season, played okay. Obviously, you have to take into account that he hasn't been playing, so there's that. But, it's clear to see why Adrian Heath has preferred the guys that he's had playing, because Collins still has that reckless tendency mm-hmm. to dive right in and to get pulled out of shape, because he'll try to track the ball at times when he shouldn't and miss the man slipping behind him and that kind of thing. There were a couple of nervy moments in that second half that I thought probably were a little more nervy than they needed to be.
Oh, without a doubt. I think our shape just changed so much, and we saw why we conceded so many goals last year was, like you say, Colin chases the ball and not necessarily the player he's out to mark. And that's mm-hmm. the most dangerous thing that you can do at center back, because you're potentially going to play somebody onside when they should have been off. You've got to step up in that Arsenal back line. Everybody steps up as one and catches the guy out. Colin doesn't allow you to do that. He also just steps in with the rash challenges and doesn't necessarily try to muscle the guy off the ball and not concede the foul. He just goes straight to ground and hopes that he gets to the ball first, which unfortunately for him, as he's getting older, is getting harder, because that mm-hmm. ball's always just that one step a little bit further away from him. You can totally see why the partnership changed. I think you kind of saw that on Twitter a little bit more this week, where people kind of stopped defending why he wasn't being selected. And, you don't want to blame him for the goal, but it was definitely a contributing factor to us conceding that one and destroying the potential back-to-back clean sheets that we have yet to attain.
Yeah, there was a little bit of moment of indecision on his part at the beginning of that play when the ball came into the box. He was a little late getting out to block the shot, and when he got there, he didn't get all of it. So it kind of started to pinball around a bit, and there was other blame to go around. I think Darwin got caught ball watching a little bit as well, and Carrasco, I think, was left with two guys and maybe didn't go to the right one. But you know, it's certainly once the ball starts pinballing around in there, you know, all bets are off. So it was certainly not all Aurelien's fault for sure. You know, he was partly culpable, and that's unfortunate because, again, it was his first action of the season, and you know, he probably, his recognition and his reaction is probably not where it needs to be yet.
Well, and I think you kind of saw his reaction as well after the goal went in. Like, I think he kind of felt like he was a part of it. You know, he hadn't got that match fitness, and I think he did want to kind of take it in as his fault, but you don't want to see that, and especially going into the fact that he probably is going to have to start this game. You know, Mateos isn't going to be able to go the full 90, which you expect from center backs. So he's got to suck it up, move on, and hopefully he'll learn from his mistakes. Even though you got to say, for a guy who's making his money and his age, he should have learned from those mistakes already.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. We know that Aguita had a tough first game this year, so and then got much better. So hopefully, you know, if Colin gets the start on Friday, that he'll be able to step up and elevate his play somewhat. Let's talk about Breck Shea a little bit, because it was 1-0, and Shea got a yellow card for coming through the back of Dairon Asprilla. And a lot of people said that should have been a red card right off the get-go. And I can't defend Breck Shea on the tackle. It was reckless. It was from behind. It was late. I will say, though, that when you've got the 2015 MLS Referee of the Year and you dismiss his decision when he was, you know, in pretty good position to make a call, you know, I don't understand what that says about the officiating process in Major League Soccer.
I think, you know, I had the benefit of watching it on television, you know, saw the foul, knew it was a card, wasn't too sure what color. I got the benefit of a replay, and I was like, he could have totally been off and probably should have been. Alan Kelly doesn't get that opportunity. You know, the ability to upgrade it to a red card takes a unanimous decision. It takes a lot of people watching that replay. And I think the replay made it seem a lot worse. Like, I didn't hear a scream from Asprilla going down. I didn't hear that in the real-time play. So I'm actually going to give the benefit of the doubt to Kelly. He made the right decision from his perspective. That's kind of the reason the disciplinary committee exists. But I also don't like the fact that they took a TV replay, watched it 10, 15 times, and said, you know what? Yeah, it was dangerous. We're going to give him a suspension. That seems a little unfair. To Portland, because they could have played half the game with being a man up and then also penalizing us when we didn't suffer that penalty in the game.
Right. And now we were on the side of it that Portland was on, you know, in terms of Orlando City had a guy who, you know, from Portland's perspective, should have been off and should have given them a better chance to win the game. Well, last year when Orlando City played Vancouver Whitecaps, two guys got disciplined the week after the game.
Yep.
And it was a 1-0 final. It came down to basically the last kick of the game. And I'm pretty sure that Orlando City might have had a different outcome had they played two men up against Vancouver last year. So, I mean, these kind of things, they're rare. They sort of balance out over the course of, you know, long periods of time like this. So, you know, at this point, I guess it's fortunate that the red card came, you know, midweek instead of, you know, when it happened. And obviously, you know, that's the good news. If you're the glass is half empty kind of guy, you're saying, oh, we had two injuries and now this, and now we're down three starters. So, you know, I guess from my perspective, it's just, it is what it is. We're going to test the depth of this club going up against a much improved Philadelphia side on Friday. And, you know, Breck Shea will have to learn not to leave his feet in that kind of situation. Because, I mean, there's literally almost no way he's getting that ball.
Yeah. I think that's really why it became a red card, because the replay just shows that so much more. Whereas in a bang bang situation, you know, the referee doesn't always have that benefit of the doubt. But he was never making that ball. And to be honest with you, it's not the first time Breck Shea has made that kind of challenge. So, you know, it's a live and learn. but look at it this way. We at least have the ability to know that he's going to be missing right from the start. We can get a few minutes in training without him rather than just being like, oh, you know what? Crap. We got sent off. We now got to play a man down. We're at least going to get to keep that 11th guy on the field.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So that's good news. And, you know, speaking of the Philadelphia Union, who they are 2-2-0, a tough loss down to 10 men at Chicago in very difficult conditions. I don't know if you saw any of that game, Andrew, but parts of the game were sunny, and then other parts it looked like there was a blizzard going on with snowing sideways. Yeah. So I was enjoying it. I was watching our compadre, Paul Tenorio, who's now on the broadcast crew with the Fire, you know, wishing him to stay warm up there. But it was tough conditions, very windy, and down 10 men. Philadelphia still actually, you know, in large patches of the game outplayed Chicago and maybe could have got a result, but they lost 1-0. A much improved Philadelphia team. They won 10 games all of last year, already with two in the first four games this year. We're going to bring in our special guest now, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Orlando City against the Philadelphia Union. Joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we're excited to have Eugene Rapinski. He's the managing editor at Brotherly Game, our SB Nation sister site covering the Philadelphia Union. Eugene, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How about you?
No complaints on our end. Well, some complaints. We lost Breck Shea today, but for the game on Friday. But you know, a minor complaint, I guess. Other than that, you know, things are good.
Gotcha.
You know, weather's been beautiful down here the last few days, and after a lot of rain and lightning, and you know, we're just excited about Friday. Want to see some soccer, see if Orlando City can keep this thing going at your expense. I wanted to first ask you, Eugene, about the Union, because the Union last year, 10 wins the whole season, already off to a pretty good start, 2-2-0, kind of an intermittent blizzard that they played in last weekend against Chicago Fire, down to 10 men, so probably not indicative of what maybe the result should have been there. But, you know, as someone who has watched the Union over the years, what seems to be the difference with this year's team?
I think the big difference is that the club has a sense of direction. You know, years past, it seemed like we just kind of went into the preseason looking to, you know, maybe add a player here or there, you know, and it seems like this year they got rid of a lot of dead weight, a lot of players that were aging out, a lot of guys that just weren't producing, and brought in some guys, you know, with a real reputation and a real chance to prove themselves. You know, when you get rid of, you know, a guy like Andrew Wenger, and no offense to him, but he just didn't produce last year, and you replace him, you know, with a guy like Elzinho, you know, that's a huge upgrade. And that's for any team in the league. So I think, you know, the overall direction of the club and having a goal that is attainable and that they can work toward has been huge.
Well, and you mentioned the club having a sense of direction. Obviously, you didn't do too well last year, but you stuck with Jim Curtin, and he seems to have really been able to put his stamp on the team. Do you think a lot of this new direction and the rise that you've kind of had early on the season is down to him and getting rid of some of that? It's all been his, you know, his way or the highway kind of thing.
Well, I think, you know, Jim did as well as he could have last year with the cards that he was dealt. You know, if you take a look at last year's roster, there's really no way that you could have expected to have contended for an MLS Cup, let alone try to make the playoffs. I mean, the quality was very poor. I think this year, you know, Ernie Stewart has been able to kind of put his stamp on things and work his magic. You know, when he's with AZ over in the Netherlands, he was able to do more with less, and I think that is something that Philadelphia have. You know, they've always said that they weren't going to be another Seattle. They weren't going to go out and just throw a bunch of money at a player. So, you know, they're trying to work within that, and I think they've been able to accomplish building a competent and competitive roster. And I think, you know, giving Coach Curtin those tools has allowed him to do a lot better than he would have been able to do last year.
No, Eugene, you mentioned shipping some guys out. One of the guys that surprised me and probably surprised some people around the league, but maybe there was a good reason for it, Christian Maidana getting sent to Houston. What was the thought behind that? And usually you don't see a player that was producing like that on a team that wasn't very productive and very effective last year. Usually those are the players that kind of stick around and get built around. But in this case, he goes packing and it ends up like almost helping the club a little bit.
Sure. No, I mean, it caught a lot of us here by surprise as well. If you look at last year's roster, Chaka was one of the few guys that actually produced, to produce 10 assists, to go into the last game of the season tied for the league lead in assists. On the Union, on a team that couldn't shoot straight, it says a lot about him. So for us, it was kind of crazy, but I guess the ends have justified the means. I mean, we were able to free up cap space. We were able to bring in a guy like Elzinho, bring in a guy like Roland Alberg, just really retool the midfield. So what was Maidana and a couple of other guys has turned into a fairly formidable midfield, and one that I think competes with just about any in MLS.
Well, and one of those things, you've had a lot of movement around, and one of those guys that's come in this year was Craval, and he's going to be missing on Friday. Do you think he's going to be a big miss for you?
Absolutely. I've been pretty high on Craval since we picked him up last year. I've always thought that he had the talent the raw talent to be a solid MLS defensive midfielder. And I think, learning alongside of a guy like Brian Carroll can only, help him out in that regard. And that the first few games, the first two, three games that he was in, he did very well. Now, the game in Chicago, he actually was doing well, with the exception of those two tackles that he made. I thought that he was having a decent game, and then he picked up the yellow card, and then he picked up the straight red card, and you just can't do that. So I think that's going to hurt the Union quite a bit to not have his physical presence there, especially when you're facing guys like Kyle Aaron and Kaká and the guys in the Orlando midfield. I mean, having that body there is missing out on that, I should say, is going to be huge.
Well, you may have dodged a bullet, because Kyle Aaron tweaked his hamstring on Sunday and is being called doubtful right now. Certainly with somebody of Kyle's, the way he plays, I would be surprised if Adrian Heath rushes him back into the lineup. I would expect he'll leave him home to get an extra 10 days or so rest before the New England game. But one of the things you and I have been chatting online, and you talked a little bit about how Philadelphia is a club that seems to be okay with the other team possessing the ball and trying to strike back on the counter. And that reminds me of the team you guys played last week, the Chicago Fire. They seem to play a similar style. Is that sort of the style that you would compare the Union's play to?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, Chicago is a team that doesn't seem to want to hold on to the ball, and I mean that in the most positive of ways. I mean, they're not looking to set up a lot of holding up the ball and moving things around. I mean, they like to hit teams on the counter, and I think in terrible conditions, in the snow and the wind. And us going down 10 men, that sort of, kind of played into their strength. I mean, yeah, even though that's, our strength as well. I think that really did us a disservice. I think we are similar, but not exactly alike in that regard.
Well, and I think it does. So we're heading into Friday's contest. Some of our fans may not be as familiar with your team as they are with Orlando City's. Who should we be watching out for to be a threat for us, against us?
Sure thing. Well, you know, I've touched on the guys in the midfield. Chris Pontius has returned to the form that he had back in his glory days with DC United a couple years ago. You know, if he can maintain being injury-free, I don't see any sort of drop-off with that. I think Roland Alberg is a guy who seems like he's finally fit and is fitting in very well with the Union offense. And Ilzinho as well, you know, the interplay between Alberg and Ilzinho against the Fire, I mean, just the stuff that they were trying to do and pulling off most of the time was incredible. It's not stuff that you see in MLS, a lot of, you know, give and go. You know, his elastico against, you know, Michael Harrington was pretty well received throughout the league. You know, you just don't see that sort of stuff every day in MLS, and to know that you have that sort of talent and an offensive threat on your team is it's actually a good feeling. It's not one we're used to having here in Philadelphia.
And for those of you who may that name may sound familiar, Michael Harrington, just a few games ago against Chicago, he's the one that got sent off for the flying kick to Breck Shea's man parts and put Chicago down for most of that game. All right, here's what I don't get. These teams have met twice. Philadelphia is not known as the most leak-proof team, let's say, in MLS. And Orlando City has zero goals to show for it in two games. So what's going on there? What kind of voodoo is Philadelphia using to keep us off the scoreboard?
if I told you, I'd have to kill you. I think that Philadelphia... The defense, especially this year, and to an extent last year, was always kind of hit or miss. The guys would go out. Some guys would go out last year and have a couple of good games, and then they give up four goals to Red Bull before halftime. You know, that sort of thing. I think this year it's been a bit more consistent. I think you guys just happened to catch up on the rare occasion where the defense was able to cope and was able to play as a unit and not, four guys running around toward the goal. So, I mean, it was unlucky for you, but, you know, again, it was one of the very few bright spots for this club.
Obviously, one player a lot of people know is Sebastian Letou. He seems to have been out the lineup past few games, more as a super sub. Is that the role that you're starting to see him transition into?
I believe so. I think, the quality of the midfield has increased dramatically over the past couple of years, and that's really not a knock on Letou. I mean, certainly he's a guy that's known for his speed and his pace and his work rate, and he is on the wrong side of 30, but he hasn't, it's not like he's lost a step. It's not like he has, all of a sudden become one of the slower guys on the team. Like, that's not the case. I think the thing here is that we have so many good options at center mid that, you know, he's just kind of fallen down the depth chart a little bit, you know. But, you know, frankly, to have a guy like Letou as a depth option is not something that we've ever had here. We've always had a very big gulf between the starting 11 players and then, you know, this kind of second tier guys. I mean, there's always been a wide gap between that, and I think now that gap has closed. And I think, you know, you may see Letou starting a few games, especially if injuries hit and some guys start to not produce. But I would think that he is probably best utilized off of the bench. I mean, there's nothing more fearsome for a coach, you know, if you have to fly from, you know, Orlando or from Houston or wherever to Philadelphia on a weeknight on short rest, and you've got those tired legs, and 60, 75 minutes in, a burner like Letou comes out, like that's got to be kind of terrifying.
You know, Eugene, one of the things around MLS that Philadelphia has been the butt of many jokes, in Philadelphia more than anywhere else, actually, with the insane number of goalkeepers you guys have used over the years. But it seems like that position has solidified now with Andre Blake, and he's been he's turned in player of the week type performances and that kind of thing. Has he brought some stability to that position finally for Philadelphia?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. You know, it's good to have a kind of proven number one guy and a guy of the caliber of Andre, and to have that kind of confidence going into a game and knowing he's back there, like, that's huge. You know, some of the guys that we've had before were okay. I mean, a guy like McMath, he was serviceable, but never really that kind of stud goalkeeper. I think the only one that the club has ever really had was Fareed Munderbone back in 2011, and he was only here for a year. You know, other than that, when you're dealing with, you know, putting in, you know, a guy that would be a second or a third keeper on just about any other team, you know, to have a stable, solid figure like Blake back there is absolutely huge. You know, so it's good to finally shed that kind of mantle of being the butt of all goalkeeper jokes, and I really wish the Colorado Rapids well with that.
Well, and obviously you guys had pretty good draft selections. Are you hoping to see more out of people like Ferbers going forward? And obviously Keegan Rosenberry has had a pretty good, I know he wasn't a super draft this year, but he's had a pretty good start to the year too.
Yeah, no, Rosenberry has been, you know, it was kind of a surprise that he was not able to be brought on as a homegrown player. And when he did declare for the draft, you know, we all kind of were like, okay, well, where's he going to wind up? To see him taken by Philadelphia, I think, shocked a lot of people, but they were really high on him, and for good reason, obviously. I mean, he's come in, he was basically called on as a spot starter. The Ray Gattis, who had held that position right back last year, got injured, you know, a couple days before the first game, and Rosenberry really just kind of has held on to that spot. I mean, his play has been phenomenal. A guy like Herbers has been utilized more as a late game sub, I think, more just to get him minutes and to get him in with the first team. But, you know, I think he's a guy that can come a long way in MLS as well. You know, Taylor Washington is another guy that is, you know, left back that we drafted that I think is going to make a name for himself. You know, he's learning under Fabinho, and he's getting a lot of minutes at Bethlehem Steel FC. So I think, you know, he's going to come a long way as well. You know, the Union seem to have done very well for themselves in the draft, and that's so important when you're a club that isn't going to go out and just drop a lot of money on a DP center back or a DP striker or something like that, you know.
Eugene, before we let you get out of here, it's a two-part question, I guess. What is Philadelphia's main weakness that Orlando should look to exploit, and the second part of that is who on Orlando City kind of frightens Union fans and they're a little bit leery of going up against?
Sure. Well, for the first part, a guy that Orlando fans should be kind of worried about. I'm sorry, that wasn't the question. What was the question?
Yeah, where are the weak points that in Philadelphia that Orlando City should look to exploit? And then the second part is you know, who on Orlando City is Philadelphia kind of nervous about facing?
Okay, I'll try better this time. So, you know, weaknesses that the Union have, obviously it's been shown that, you know, a card, you know, red card is a weakness. If we go down a guy, especially as early in the game as we did against Chicago, we're stuck. You know, so I think that's going to be something keeping the Union out of foul trouble. I think another weakness to exploit is just, you know, there's going to be somebody new playing at midfield. It's probably going to be Vincent Noguera, who's coming back off of an injury. So he may not have the freshest legs. He may not be able to go, you know, for a full 90 minutes that might be a weakness to exploit. Yeah, other things is just, trying to exploit the miscommunications that happened between a team. I mean, the Union, this isn't the Union that you guys faced last year. You're not going to see a whole lot of those kind of boneheaded errors that lead to easy goals. I think you may see one or two of them, and if Orlando can capitalize on that, then they'll win. If they cannot seize those couple of opportunities, it's going to be a long night for you guys. Somebody who scares Union fans, I mean, Kaká is always a good answer. I don't want to necessarily go with him because I think that's a cop-out. So I'll go with the midfield combination of Iguita and Soren. I think those guys are kind of overlooked, and it's very easy to do so when you've got, Breck Shea and a Kaká and a Kyle Larin on the team. It's very easy to overlook, guys like that who do the kind of grunt work that makes a team successful. Those are the kind of guys that scare me personally. That, if they have a good game, if they can continue to do the things that they do, those little things that help a team win, then it's going to be a tough night for us. If we can get them off of their game, then who knows? We probably have a better shot of getting 3 points.
Well, we'll see what happens on Friday night. I mean, these two teams in two games in MLS play have no goals in the run of play, just a Latou penalty to show for the scoring, just as you'd expect from these, defensive stalwart clubs. Eugene, I appreciate you coming on so much and talking to us. We didn't even bring up CJ Sapong, who was here for a few games has blossomed here the last year for Philadelphia. But
sure.
Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your blog?
Sure thing. I'm on Twitter at Golazo del Gringo. You can always follow myself and the rest of the Brotherly Game crew at Brotherly Game, and check us out at www.brotherlygame.com. As Michael said, we are one of the brother blogs. It's always weird referring to Brotherly Game as a sister blog. That always kind of makes me laugh. But yeah, we like talking soccer with you guys, and if anybody's coming up, it's dress warm. It's going to be cold.
And Eugene knows. He knows the difference because he has family down here in Florida. So, but Eugene Rapinski, managing editor at Brotherly Game. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you probably again in a few weeks.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Well, this 44th episode of the Mainland Podcast is starting to wind down, Andrew. But we want to thank our guest, Eugene Rapinski. He's the managing editor at Brotherly Game, our SB Nation brother blog, as he likes to put it. And so, we always say sister blog. I don't really know why. I don't think there's it makes any sense to use gender in any capacity when you talk about it. There are affiliate blog, let's say.
Yeah.
That covers the Philadelphia Union.
I have no idea where the entomology of female blogs came from, so,
Yeah. It's like, ships and cars and things like that.
Yeah, but nobody smashes a bottle of champagne off a blog when it opens up,
Well, there's a lot of people that would like to smash some bottles over us, I think, sometimes. but before we get out of here and call it a podcast, I do want to call attention to the fact that we're playing the Union on Friday, and we have to get in here with our key matchups and our match predictions, Andrew. And since it's just you and me, we need to get into it and really understand what's going to happen on Friday night.
I think, we're on the end of it's going to be a short game week for us. We got travel involved. I think it's going to be a cagey affair. I'm trying to think back to our Friday record. We don't necessarily have a great record on Fridays. So it's a little bit of a boggy day for us. So I think it's going to be a tough contest. Philadelphia has really got something to prove. They've started the season well. And, are we the last unbeaten team in Major League Soccer?
Us, Sporting Kansas. No, Real Salt Lake is also unbeaten.
Also unbeaten, you know, and, yeah. And we had a good game against those guys. And, you know, we came back for that one. So that shows where we are. I think they're going to miss Krivel, like we talked about in the conversation with Eugene. I am still going to say key matchup is definitely going to be that midfield. They have a lot of new guys that we haven't really played before. That's going to be very dangerous for us, and we're not going to have a lot of game footage on them as well. So you can't really train for that. We're also going to be missing people ourselves. So we've got a lot of moving pieces. And so I'm actually just going to say it's going to be matchups all over the field. It's a little bit of a cop-out, but we don't know enough about them from film. We've got so many changes in our lineup, including Shea today. So that's something that we can prepare for, but not as well as we could have done. And I am going to actually say it is a high-scoring 2-2 draw.
Okay. We're going to get it some goals in the run of play finally against Philadelphia?
I think we are. I think that Kaká also, like I wrote in my roundtable last week, I think he really is going to start knocking up our dead ball percentages and getting up those numbers that we need to be scoring on free kicks and corners.
Okay. Well, I would like to see that, actually. I think, for me, the key matchup in this match is going to be Philadelphia's wide players. Ilsenio, he impressed me in that Chicago game. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a very skilled player. I think they're wide players against Orlando City's fullbacks, especially with Shea out and with Ramos has, you know, being off to sort of an okay but not great start this year. So it'll be up to Bowden and Ramos. I'm guessing Bowden. I don't see why it would be anybody else. But, you know, by the way, it's 7-0 now for USA over Colombia as we're recording this.
somebody throw in the towel.
Yeah, somebody's going to need to do that. You know, they should just start the bus. But, so I think Ramos and Bowden are going to have to play well in this match to keep the balls from coming into the dangerous areas for Sapong. And also I think that we need the typical standout game in the middle from Seren and Aguita, and I think that they've got to keep their heads for the second straight game. I don't think that they can, be reckless and get fouls and get yellow cards and that kind of thing. I think they're going to have to keep their heads and you know, just play, you know, the strong soccer that they've been playing this season. And that, to me, is the key to this game, because there's plenty of, you know, firepower in the lineup, even with Laren out. So, it'll be interesting to see. I am, I'm going to, score-wise, I don't know. Man, it's hard, because it's hard to predict a lot of goals when you're yet to score a goal against a team. So,
I think the reason I'm going with that is I think both teams have changed so much in the off season that it's just going to be a completely different affair.
Yeah, It is, but also I say it with respect for Andre Blake, because he's playing really well this year too. So I'm going to say it's going to be a 1-1 draw. That's going to be it would be nice to stay unbeaten, stay at the top of the table, anytime you get a road point in the MLS, it's good. But Orlando just hadn't seemed to get over the hump against this Philadelphia team yet, and you know, we went with Alan Kelly Sunday, winning the 2015 MLS Referee of the Year. Well, we're going to get the third place finisher in that Referee of the Year, voting last year. Hiram Marufo is the referee on Friday night in Talon Energy Stadium. It's not PPL Park anymore. So, it should be interesting. Last week, I want to call attention to this because it was brought to my attention on Twitter. Last week I said I didn't want to predict that a defender would score because how many times I've been wrong, and two defenders scored.
So this time, don't predict, and then it'll still come true. Maybe that's the way.
Yeah. So I don't want to predict that Kaká will get a hat trick.
Oh, I like it. You went lofty, is what I like about that.
I don't want to pretend that. I'm not going to predict that he's going to get a hat trick. But no, I see it as a 1-1, and I don't know where the goal will come from. It might come from some un, like unexpected source like Darwin Serrin, or maybe like a guy who just works really hard like Adrian Winter.
You could go for Bendik in the 94th on a last minute corner kick if you really want if you want to make it something extraordinary.
Bendik, boy, yeah, we didn't even really talk about the penalty so much as other than, you know, obviously it was a huge play in the game because he was, you know, kept the game from getting to 2-1 before the half. Yep. So it was really something, and I think that Orlando City fans are squarely, you know, like, I know that a lot of people complained about getting rid of Tally Hall, and a lot of people weren't giving Bendik very much credit when he was brought in, but I think that he squarely has Orlando City fans on his side now.
Oh, I think, you know, I'm definitely one of those people that was not rating him at the start. His positioning looked terrible. He was just kind of all over the place. But you know what? I think what he really learned was his back line. And as soon as you can grasp a back line as a goalkeeper, your job becomes infinitely easier. And those people, you know, they bailed him out. The New York City game was a prime example of him knowing his guys in front of him and getting that positioning right that allowed him to stop the ball so much easier. And that takes time, and he's gotten those minutes, and he's gotten those times in training, and I think we're starting to see it on game day now.
Yeah. Now, one thing, a nice programming note, Saturday night, Orlando City B is going to travel up to Kentucky to play Louisville City. So it will be last year's affiliate in the USL playing, you know, Orlando City's reserve side, OCB, which they're still looking for their first victory. They're 0-1-1. They got... they had a man sent off very early in the second half, Tony Rocha, who will be suspended for this week's game. And Tony has been a guest on the podcast, so we're sorry to see him get that suspension. But pretty deserved. Those were two yellow cards that he got that were pretty much no doubters. And it was unfortunate. But Orlando City B, some resolute defending, very heroic goalkeeping, was able to get a 0-0 draw and get their first point in USL. And they will go up and play in Louisville Slugger Field on Saturday, and our Jeff Milby will be there to cover that, Andrew.
You know, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be it's going to show why we potentially wanted to be our own affiliate. You know, we did this for a reason. We wanted to develop talent. And also Louisville lost some talent in the offseason with the loss of Brian Burke, as well as USL top scorer and record holder Matt Fondi. So I think it will be an interesting game, especially when you contrast it with the fact that they managed to beat the full side in a mid-season friendly last year.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game. I'm looking forward to watching that on the YouTubes. Yeah. On Saturday. So we're just about 10 days away from the Pride starting their season at Portland. And then, of course, there'll be the home opener against Houston. Carly Lloyd bringing her team, the Houston Dash, into the Citrus Bowl. They're trying to set a record, folks, for NWSL attendance, which I believe is in the 21,000 range. Mm-hmm. I think Orlando can crush that record.
If they don't, I don't see how the Pride stay a team very long in this city. You know, they need a really strong showing from the get-go, and I think the club's done a great marketing. You know, there was a lot of home opener 2-for-1s or pair tickets before Orlando City kicked off. There are a lot of tickets floating around. I don't see how they don't shatter that record, and probably a record that could be held for a really long time.
Yeah, I think so, and I think you and your wife will be there, and I know I'll be there, and hopefully all of our listeners will be there. But that'll about do it for episode 44 of the Mainland Podcast. Andrew, I want to make sure that folks visit us on iTunes and give us a good iTunes rating, make some good comments there for us if you like the show. Also, you know, obviously if you listen to the show on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or Blog Talk Radio, you're not that familiar with the print version of our show, well, we've got a lot more than this at our website, which is www.themainland.com. Maine is spelled M-A-N-E. Please visit us online. Please follow us on Twitter. We're at The Mainland. And like us on Facebook. And I think that takes care of just about all our business. So, Andrew Harrison, on your behalf and on behalf of the clowns who couldn't be on the show tonight with us because they had, like, important things to do, I am Michael Citro for the Mainland, saying, I'm signing off saying, Go City!